Hey, volleyball coaches, the new USA Volleyball Coach Academy is available now. Subscribers will have access to engaging interactive modules taught by top coaches from across the country, including national team coaches and staff. From fundamentals to advanced play, all coaching content is based on the USA Volleyball development model to help you coach the whole athlete. USA Volleyball members will have free access to the bronze tier. When you're ready to level up, you can subscribe to the silver or gold tiers. Live online sessions are only available in the gold tier. Watch out for more information on USA Volleyball social media and the USA Volleyball website.
City, Colorado Springs, Colorado. This is the USA Volleyball Show, and here are your hosts, Clarence Hughes and Stephen Munson.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the USA Volleyball Show. We are coming to you sort of live in Omaha, Nebraska, of all places in the United States. Stephen, or should I say, Divine.
Yeah. Won't name the coffee shop that did this, but found a new spelling to my name that I had never seen before. S T E V I N.
I thought it was a U, but hey, you know,
maybe there was a U.
Each their own with their handwriting. Mine looks like chicken scratch.
So I love that. That was fun. No, it's great to be here in Omaha, Nebraska.
What are we doing here? What's happening right now?
My first time at this very special event, the ABCA convention. And the NCAA championships, women's volleyball championships.
Likewise.
The energy
first time here too.
Yeah, the energy is awesome so far. We got in pretty late last night after our nine hour drive
about
from Colorado.
Hours. We had quite the series of events, you know. Curtis Ward and I, we started from Colorado Springs driving up to Denver to pick up you, Stephen.
Yep.
And then we left some materials back in the spring, so we had to drive an hour and a half back down the other way. And then we went way out east and kind of took the very scenic route through Kansas City.
It worked out, though.
Through Kansas, not Kansas City, sorry. The outskirts of Kansas.
Yeah, yeah.
And then ended up here late last night.
Uh-huh.
And I was very fortunate we took that route because there are a lot of people kind of stranded up in the,
like Northeast Colorado area.
Section of Colorado.
Hang in there, Maluska McCarthy. Yeah. Our colleague in marketing, who's supposed to be here right now with us, but unfortunately took the route that we were originally planned to go on and is stuck there in Northeast Colorado. But sending good vibes to her. Hopefully we see her here
and everybody
soon.
Else traveling.
And everyone else traveling
too.
That
you
route
know,
to
you're
your
a trucker
from wherever.
You know, you're part of the staff making your way over here.
Yeah.
Traveling in general. You know, hope you guys are all safe getting through these, you know, winter storms.
Yeah.
They're,
yeah.
No joke.
Well, very exciting episode we have this episode here. Very exciting guest. Pretty high profile guest, I would say.
Pretty or very?
Very high, very profile, high profile guest. Very excited to be able to steal U.S. men's national team head coach, UCLA men's volleyball head coach, John Sparrow. Exciting to steal him away from his long list of duties here at ABCA.
Oh, the list
NCAA.
Is endless for sure. Literally did our interview and was off to the races elsewhere.
His phone was blowing up during the interview and a bunch of new things added to his list of his itinerary for the weekend. But exciting to get to talk to him. Great conversation. I know our listeners will definitely enjoy it. But let's just jump right
to it. Right in. Let's go
right in. Here's U.S. men's national team head coach and UCLA men's volleyball head coach, John Sparrow. John, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us here at the ABCA convention, the American Coaches Volleyball Association convention. Did I get that acronym right?
You did.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, sweet.
Yeah, nailed it.
Awesome.
I like how you looked at me like I created
right,
it. You
know? Right, right. No, awesome. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with us. We really appreciate it. This is exciting to have you here.
Well, it's exciting to be at this event. This event's fun to just see all the coaches come together in one location every year. A lot of friends, a lot of talk about volleyball, of course, and a lot of good speakers and an opportunity to have conversations like this.
Yeah. So right off the bat here, what's your role here at the convention? I know you're doing some presentations. Right. But what all are you involved in here?
A few different things. I think, first of all, I like coming just to represent men's volleyball. This is centered around the women's volleyball championship. And a lot of times the men's coaches haven't really arrived or shown up in terms of the numbers that, well, it's hard to match the numbers on the women's side, but I want to make sure that we're represented. I think as the national team coach, that's important to be here and see people and have meetings. A lot of meetings are scheduled this week. So I think it's an important time and opportunity to really connect with people in the sport. I'm speaking, so I'll be giving some educational seminars. And then we're also running a board meeting for the First Point Volleyball Foundation. So a lot of different hats I'm wearing this awesome. Year, this convention.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about the First Point Foundation a little bit later. Okay. But yeah, I hope you have your running shoes on because you'll be running around session to session.
Yeah, Thursday's crazy. I usually come in today, and I really wanted to come in yesterday just so I could have a day to relax, connect, do the show, and then get into Thursday running. Because once Thursday starts, it's nonstop.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that for us, too. We got a lot of different hats that we're wearing as well. Filming a lot for coaching education.
And all right.
We're actually doing a live podcast in the podcast center, which we haven't found out where that is yet. But
I'm sure it's nice.
But I'm sure it's nice. Yeah, we're going to do that with Tama Miyashiro. So that's going to be great.
Oh, great.
And hopefully have a little live audience, some foot traffic coming through to check that out. But
yeah, if you're walking by, we'll be there for
that's
sure.
Right. Oh, cool. When is that?
That is Friday. Is that right, Curtis? Okay. Yeah, Friday. Mm. So we're excited for that. But yeah, doing a lot. Yeah. Doing a lot, but we're excited for it. It's our first time here, too.
Oh, well, you're going to, it's a show.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. There's a lot
I've been
of
to a
here.
Lot of different volleyball events, but this is the first ABCA I've been to. I think the first you as well.
That is correct. Yeah.
It seems ABCA. A lot. I saw your post about meeting some of the alumni, UCLA alumni,
right.
I think, and or coaching alumni.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, friends. But it seems kind of similar to the what High Performance used to do with the coaching clinic, just like
right.
community. Volleyball community coming together and coaches, that small community coming together and catching up.
Well, there's just a lot of friends here. Obviously, I'm here and I'm supporting Texas because Eric Sullivan, the assistant coach, he and I were roommates in the dorms. Dykstra, room 710, you know?
Love that.
So I think there's a lot of friendships here, and it's fun to see former players, former assistant coaches that have now moved on to their head coaching careers. And oftentimes we get so busy in the coaching profession, recruiting, and obviously me traveling around during the summers with USAV, that's the one time a year where we really can get back together and share some stories.
Yeah, that's cool.
How are your nerves going into this? And you seem very cool, calm, and collected, you know, get here, you know, a few days in advance, you know, to relax and such too, but you know, lots going on, you're being pulled in multiple directions, you know, are you ever getting nervous in, you know, situations like this? And
I don't get nervous. I know tomorrow I've got to be prepared. Mm-hmm. I have to be prepared tomorrow because I have the board meeting, and that'll be in the morning, and then I'll go straight from that to the coaches luncheon, and then I walk straight from that right to the on-court session. Mm-hmm. I'm giving a clinic on blocking, so I've got to finish that this afternoon and really reflect, because it's not just what we do on the national team, but the audience here is so broad-based. You have club coaches, college coaches, coaches of both genders and different levels. And so if I'm going to be talking about what we're doing blocking-wise on the national team for the men, it may not always relate to everybody that's listening. So I'm going to spend a little time this afternoon and be prepared for that. And then I leave right from that and go into a seminar where I think it's more of just a Q&A, so that's easy. And then I go to a little happy hour where we're doing some First Point networking. Okay. And then I'll go to the match. And when I get to the match, Clarence, then I'll be able to sit down, relax, watch some volleyball. Then it's nice. I don't get nervous to answer your question. It's me mostly going around and talking. So I do that quite a bit as part of my profession. So it's a little bit like riding a bike.
Okay. Just kind of for our fans, our listeners, USA Volleyball fans, UCLA fans too. What's something they don't know about you? Any like hobbies, interests, you know, book genres you like? Favorite TV shows that you like to binge or something like that?
Well, it's interesting. I used to be really an avid reader. I used to read a lot. In fact, when I first started coaching with Hugh McCutcheon, when I was the assistant in 2007 and 2008, we were doing all these flights. I'd been coaching at UC Irvine for 3-4 years at that point. maybe going on five. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking to myself, I'm a coach, and yet I really don't have an academic background in a lot of these areas which we're pulled to do. Meaning, I majored in a science at UCLA, but I didn't have any background in specific academic understanding of motor learning. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a list of all the different books I could potentially read. And then we all are in the recruiting business. Mm-hmm. So is that sales? Is that talent acquisition? What is that? Okay, what are some of those things I really wanted to learn? I wrote these different categories out, and I just started to study and read like crazy. Like, I'd always been more of a fiction guy. And in 2007, I became a nonfiction guy.
Okay, yeah.
It was a pretty big shift. And then I spent all those flights and all that time hammering books. I just read a ton between then and I'd say 2012 when I became the head coach. I was still reading a lot. And then I got married, had two kids. And they're 5 and 7 right now, Brooklyn and Haley. And so my reading has literally grinded to a complete halt. So when you say like hobbies, like I was thinking about all the things I used to do before parenting.
Yeah.
My hobby now is parenting.
Right.
It's
right.
The one thing I have time to do besides coach and interact with my teammate or my players and coaching staffs. So yeah, I used to be really into photography. I used to be cool. Really into reading.
Yeah.
Used to snowboard a little bit, but that's really tough during the men's volleyball season because that's right through the winter. So all these things I used to do. Now I just try and find time to work out. Yeah, I think that's really important for me, finding that time. And the best way for me to do that is I work out with the team. So I do that with the national team as much as I can, particularly when I'm on the road. And then
I see you in the weight room with them side by side.
Yeah, I try to do
laps and stuff in the gym. Yeah,
that's right. I do the warm up with them every day. Mm-hmm. That gets me a little loosened up and my flexibility isn't so great. So that helps me there. And then I try to get a lift in with them every time they're lifting on the road. At home, it's a little bit harder because the weight room's a little bit smaller. But at UCLA, I work out with the guys and do their plan every day, every time they lift. And that's my way of getting that in. I got to take care of myself.
Well, after the women's national team open program last year, Nate Goh, one of your assistants, him and I went snowboarding together.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So you got to come up with us sometime.
Oh my gosh. I would love to
dust off the old board.
We were talking about it next week.
Yeah.
Because it snowed recently so much in California and that's just rare this time of year and rare for me to have a week off before the Christmas holiday, but our kids are still in school. They're there in school late. And I was like, gosh, can we pull them out? let's do this.
Yeah. I'm a bad guide, I would say, though. I lost Nate for about half an hour, 45 minutes or so on the mountain.
Where were you at?
We were in A Basin, Arapahoe Basin in Colorado.
Okay.
Yeah. So we stayed an extra couple of days after the open program and hit me up and we went up to the mountains.
Nate loves
time.
It.
Yeah.
Nate loves it.
We had a great time.
Great.
It was fun.
Well, maybe someday.
Yeah.
All right.
Have a great. I'm going to hold you to it.
Okay. It'll sounds good. I love it. Believe me. I love it.
We talked about having like a full like USA volleyball and US national team coaching staff trip up to the mountains.
Yeah, it'd be amazing. I
kind of like a retreat. Or
I've never been before. I still need to take some time to go.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You got to do it. Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea.
That'd retreat, get a couple cabins. Yeah. And yeah, I think that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Pitch it. Social committee.
I'll take notes for you.
Really quick, you touched on just being a dad now, and that's kind of taken away some of your hobbies. But
yeah.
We have a lot of listeners who are coaches and you know, parents themselves. What do you, I guess, what's that balance like? And what do you love about being a dad and coaching? Yeah.
Well, I love just separate from coaching.
Right.
I love being a dad. Yeah. It's the greatest experience I've ever had. You hear that when you're not a parent and you're like, come on. It's pretty incredible to have this realization about how much you can love something.
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's been really, it's just been, such a special life experience. I'm a little bit of an older dad, so maybe I'm a little bit more reflective on it, but I really am really enjoying it. And I think for me, the key is to really try to disconnect and not be on my phone for periods of time when I get home in the afternoon, which is hard. I think the demands of watching video and phone calls and recruit phone, I mean, you could do that endlessly. And when I was single, I probably did. Now I've got an amazing wife and two special little girls, and I come home and I really want to bring my focus to make sure that they see that I'm present. I'm paying attention. We're playing Legos and I'm not staring at my phone. And sometimes that's hard as coaches.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for me, I'm just really trying to be present, I think, is the most important thing, and enjoy this time. Cause I know it goes fast. I can already tell. Parents say that all the time. It goes really fast. And it hasn't been a tough sell for me when people have told me that. Like, I get it. I can see it going too quick already.
Yeah. 5-7. Is that what you said?
5-7. Yeah.
Are they getting into volleyball or have they?
A little bit. Brooklyn is the 7-year-old. And last year I was watching a women's volleyball match at UCLA that we were streaming on the computer. And she crawled up on my lap and started asking me questions. Really interesting questions too. Like, what's the end line, right? Like she saw the line. Mac May was playing.
Yeah.
And so she was, why is Mac jump from behind that line when she serves the ball? And what about this? And so she was asking some really interesting questions.
Very
and
technical
Mac,
too.
What's that?
Very technical.
Oh, very. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. She's going to be fine. Brooklyn's going to be fine. So Mac was also spinning the ball on one finger as part of her serve routine, grabbing it and serving it. And oh my gosh, that was, then the girls were trying to spin the ball on her finger. And then obviously I know Mac. So Mac signed a ball for the girls.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
Then this last summer, when she was in Anaheim with the national team, we needed a babysitter. So I was like, let's call Mac. And Michelle, my wife, was, are you sure? Like, I'm like, yeah, she's in Anaheim. I'm sure she'd love to do it. The kids would lose their mind.
Yeah.
And so we did. We called Mac and she came over and babysat one day for the girls, which was really special.
How wild.
Yeah.
Have Mac May as your babysitter. Oh, you're feeling able to look back on that.
That's so cool. She was so great. Yeah, we were taking photos and doing all that.
That's so fun. That's awesome.
I know. It's funny we kind of bring this up too, because a few of like the, you know, men's national team players that we've had on the show before, have brought up the topic of fatherhood and, you know, how that's kind of bring and bonded a few players together, and, you know, how you shifted from, you know, old hobbies and habits into, you know, new habits that are, you know, centered around being a dad and being a father. So, you know, how often do you guys just have the conversations, the candid conversations of, you know, fatherhood and, you know, bonding and, you know, just overall advice you guys can give each other, you know, from a coaching standpoint, you know, to your players and such?
Well, we certainly have had an increase in the number of dads on the team. Including just the other day, Gabby Garcia had his first child.
Yeah, I saw that.
Noah was born.
Congratulations,
this past
Gabby.
Week. Yeah, congratulations to Gabby. So, Matt Anderson, Micah Christensen, Garrett Mwong, Tatia. I'm going to miss guys. David Smith obviously has been a dad for a while. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a shared experience with that. I mean, there's just, when you go through that experience, it's unique. And I don't know that we're giving each other advice, but we're sharing in experiences together and certainly celebrating being a dad. And it is fun at the training center. Usually it happens the week before we go on a trip. The moms all get together and plan a time when they all show up. And so there's usually one practice when there's a lot of kids running all over the place. Makes me nervous because I don't want an errant ball to take somebody out. I have a tendency to go stand in the back and try to get my old blocking skills back.
You go into dad mode.
Stay sharp.
I always worry about that. So it is fun to have more and more dads on the team. I've seen that generational shift. It's interesting now that I've been doing this as long as I've been doing it, I've seen these phases. When I was on the team in 2007 and 2008, Loy Ball was a dad. Tom Hoff was a dad. Riley Salmon was a dad. I'm going down the list. And you saw all of that, which is obviously a departure from my collegiate experience. Mm-hmm. Not many dads on the collegiate landscape.
That's right.
And so I thought that was fun. I wasn't a part of that at the time, but I thought it was fun. And then we get into 2000. When I took over in 2013, we ended up in Rio with the youngest team, if I'm not mistaken, because someone told me this, the youngest team that we've ever taken to the Olympic Games.
That's right. Yeah.
And so there's no dad, Dave Smith maybe at that point. So now, of course, that's all changed over the last 8 years, and here we are 10 years. And now we have got a lot of dads again. So it's just the generations continue here.
Yeah. Yeah. The athletes we've had on talk about just that, the uniqueness of being a professional athlete and a dad, and how that's just so rare, and just to have that community around them. They're all going through this, like you said, shared experiences.
Right.
They're able to kind of, you know, feed off that energy, talk about it, and have that support system, I think, with them, because you're traveling all over the world too.
Right.
And you're away from family. So
FaceTime makes a difference.
Helps. Yeah.
Yeah. Technology has helped that, I think, quite a bit.
That's true.
And you can see here, you got these big, athletic, tough guys, and you'll see one of our guys on FaceTime, you know, talking to his 4-year-old, and there's a different way of communicating with a 4-year-old, and it's pretty neat to see. And of course, I think that's the shared experience, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe in future generations, you would have given the guy a hard time for talking to his 4-year-old like that. Now you're just like, that's what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now we all do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. See a different side of the athlete. So I think it's cool. A question we always like to ask our guests is, how were you introduced to the game of volleyball?
Mm-hmm. goes way back. I grew up in Arcadia, California, which is near Pasadena. It wasn't a beach community. So not a, back in the late 80s, early 90s, when this was all happening for me, it was not a traditional place to play volleyball. There happened to be a really good volleyball coach who was a math teacher at Arcadia High by the name of Chuck Freeberg. And he had created this program at Arcadia High that was really, really successful. So one of my best friends, Robert Chai, I met him on the first day of kindergarten. He's the best man at my wedding and is now our stat guy at UCLA and has been with us in the 20 years I've been a head coach. He's been my data guy.
Awesome.
And so Rob had an older brother, Mike, and Mike had started playing volleyball at Arcadia High School. So I went over to Rob's house one day and he was like, hey, they call this pepper. Let's go out on the front lawn and do this. And I had no idea what I was like, literally no idea what I was doing. I was in junior high school playing football and baseball and basketball and recognizing that I wasn't going to play football in high school. I was going to get broken in two. And so I was trying, and I really didn't love baseball. So I was trying to find another spring sport and knew that volleyball option was there and that they were successful. And so my first formal volleyball experience was going through the Arcadia High School program. And I loved it. I think you hear this quite a bit when people are exposed to the game, that once you play it, once you actually have the opportunity, if you're not traditionally, in a community that where you see it all the time or you don't have much experience with it, but you have the opportunity to go play, most of the time people go, oh, that was really fun.
Yeah.
It's literally a very fun sport. And that's why I think we have so many late transfers, players that are coming in at a little bit later age that get exposed to that and come to the game a little bit later. At least that was my experience in the early 90s. So I think maybe we're seeing a little bit more players get introduced to it earlier. And certainly I was just at a tournament this last weekend recruiting for UCLA, and there's a 12s division down there.
Yeah.
That wasn't even on my radar when I was 12 years old. So so I know that that's good for the growth of the game.
Yeah. We'll definitely touch more on the growth of the game, especially on the boys and men's side for sure. But I love that question so much because every answer is different. We had one of our sitting national team athletes. She skipped a cheerleading practice, right? Skipped a cheerleading practice.
Yeah, like ran into one of the
sneak into the volleyball tryout.
Oh, wow. All right.
So you just never know what we're going to hear. And we love that. And I know all of our listeners also have different experiences too. So love hearing that from you.
You mentioned that like particular moment where you just kind of see it and you get hooked. Like, do you have, you know, one of those moments that you can, you know, recall, you know, from you trying the game and, you know, kind of being immersed into the program and, you know, just that light bulb moment, like, yes, I made the right decision. Like, this is it for me.
Oh, I remember a couple moments along the way where I'd played it and recognized that it fit a particular skill set for me. I remember even in ninth grade, but I started playing in 10th grade. In ninth grade, I remember playing it during PE with already the idea in my mind, hey, this is something I might do next year. I went to a 3-year high school. So at Arcadia High at the time was 3 years junior high, 3 years high school. So I knew when I was going to make that 10th grade jump that was something I was going to do. So playing that in ninth grade, I already had it in the back of my mind and I could already tell, maybe because of height, because I'd been a basketball player, I had good jumping ability. I was already the best guy on the court. So maybe it was like, I
feels
like this.
Good when you're, when
feels
you're
good
ready.
When
yeah.
you're good.
Yeah.
I think the thought that comes to mind when you're asking that question is the influence that Chuck Freeberg had on a number of us, because he knew what was out there for us. And he also knew that we had no idea. We happened to have a very special group of athletes that came through Arcadia at that moment, many of whom went on to play Division I volleyball. My senior year, we were actually undefeated, won CIF. I mean, we had a really good team. Jesse Gant went on to become an All-American at BYU. Jason McEntee was our outside here. He went to be on an All-American at Loyola Marymount. So, and there were others that went D1 as well. And so we had a randomly really good group. I mean, it's lucky, right? You have a bunch of guys that happen to be born in the right time in the right area. And that's what happened to us. But Chuck saw this, and I remember vividly getting together. He brought us over together. I remember there was four of us, and he said, hey, this is something you can do in college. And I'm telling you that you have the athleticism, and this is something you should be looking to do. And there's club volleyball that's out there. And here's a club you can go play for. And this is something you should pursue because there's a long-term impact for you. And I think when you aren't aware of what's out there for you, the mentorship that we received within that moment, the moment that Chuck took to try to inspire us for something that we didn't even know existed, I think I reflect on that moment as being a special moment for all of us and certainly my journey.
That's awesome. Yeah. We hear a lot about those, you know, the people that impacted, you know, a lot of our guests to make volleyball a career, whether that's coaching or being a player, professional player. And those people are very special. So I think that's a nice message for any coaches listening who, you know, whatever level you're at, you know, club coach, high school coach, whatever, to have that eye.
Yeah, even on the officiating side.
Right. Mm-hmm. Just recognizing, you know, your surroundings, who's around you and that talent and that not everybody knows about professional overseas volleyball or collegiate volleyball or those opportunities. So, just to share that knowledge with them, and you never know what's going to happen.
Never know. It's crazy to me.
Yeah.
There's times when I'm out on a court and you're part of a national anthem and you're in an arena overseas and there's 15,000 people there. And I mean, it's still to this day, every single time I go out there in that moment, I'm just a kid from Arcadia. How did this happen? It's wild.
Kind of switching gears here. You know, as you've been reflecting on the 2022 season with the national team, what were some of your wins for the squad? I know you had a very good outing at VNL, coming out with the silver medal. And I'm sure that was just huge for the team, especially coming off Tokyo, where the result wasn't what you guys hoped for and worked for. But your thoughts, just from, you know, your own reflection from 2022, what were some of the wins that you've been marking down?
There's a number, I think. Of course, as a coach, you're also thinking about where you came up a little bit short.
Yeah.
So that's usually at the forefront of my mind. But if we're gonna stay positive, all right, Steven, we'll stay positive.
You can bring those two.
Don't worry. I'll ask the other question.
Give them a positive spin.
Sounds good. The positives for sure were the first week of VNL. We brought a really young team. We had, I could go down the list, Jake Haynes and D'Agostino, and Josh was setting the team for really walking down the court as a starter for that week as the first time, and Kyle Ensing at opposite. We had Tyler Mitchum come off the bench against Brazil. So we just had this youth movement going on. Mason Briggs was there as a backup libero. We were just really young. We had a bunch of the veterans that were coming back late from overseas, and that was what we decided we needed to do. It's really nerve-wracking these days with the world ranking set up the way it is and how that affects Olympic qualifiers.
Yeah.
And so we really relied on these young guys to go out there and do it for USA. Mm-hmm. And so they did. I would bet if you even asked them, they didn't expect to go 4-0 that week. Right.
Yeah.
And to beat Brazil and Brazil with that young group, and Haynes had a great match. Mm-hmm. It was just, I think, really fun because the expectations were low. That's always the hard part, right? It's you want to be good. You want to be great. And that comes with expectations. And then you got to figure out how to shoulder those expectations. And that's the goal. That's where you'd rather be. When you have these opportunities sometimes that happen where you're young or you don't have all your players, or sometimes a coach inherits a program that hasn't done very well for a while. And you know, the expectations are low. And if you can figure out a way to have a good run when the expectations are low, it's the most fun in sports. It's really a blast. And so we had a blast that week. And when we got four wins, that set us off on a path that I think really gave us an opportunity to get to the finals. And I think all of us that ended up at the finals, including the number of the veterans that came back, really owe a lot to those young guys because they stepped up when we needed to. And that was really fun. That was a fun start. So that, to me, week one of VNL last year was a win.
Yeah.
Then we went on. We still pretty young. Week two did well. Then we had a really nice training block. So when we found out that we were going to have week three in Osaka I knew that Panasonic was the club team in Japan. Panasonic is coached by Laurent Tilly. Well, I coach Kevin Tilly at UC Irvine. I know the Tilly family really well. Mm-hmm. I think probably I saw the press release and text him. And because the hardest part about this summer, the challenges of this summer, okay, we'll get away from the wins for a second.
Yep.
This is the hardest travel summer we've ever had, ever. I've been doing this since 2007. This was the hardest one for sure. And it was because we spent 75 days overseas. And the way that they've set up VNL now, and I understand why they did it. They gave a week off in between thinking you could go home. But if you're in North America and don't have any domestic events, it's really hard to do that all the time. So we went down to Brazil. We did come home after that. Then we went to Bulgaria. And then do you come home to Bulgaria and then go to Japan and try to win? Not if you're going to have incredible amounts of jet lag. You're not going to know what time zone you're in.
Yeah.
So we had decided that we were going to go to Bulgaria and then go immediately to Japan. And so I called Laurent and we were able to go set up a training camp at Panasonic, which was outstanding. A win. Thank you to Panasonic for hosting us and to Laurent for being a good friend. And so we went straight there and had this amazing training camp. Micah Christensen then came and joined us. So he had a week to kind of ramp up and connect with the guys. And then we go into that last week and have another really great week in Osaka and put ourselves in the finals. The finals were a great run. Great run. We didn't play very well the first two sets of the final. At that point, you throw something against the wall and it stuck for a little while. So that was kind of fun. So that was a win. Down 0-2 and putting TJ at opposite, that was a win.
Yeah.
The fifth set was a loss. We didn't play very well. We gave up a couple aces and had a couple unforced errors. And so, you know, I'd like to get that fifth set back of the VNL finals. I think if you look back at the body of work, I think it was a really nice tournament. I think considering all that we went through and the challenges and the young guys coming in and stepping up and bringing in Micah late and all that, I think not having Maddie Anderson, all that having to do with fatherhood, by the way, they all had family obligations that we needed to manage, and we try to be really supportive of that. I thought VNL overall was great. The challenge, of course, was then how the turnaround time to World Champs. We were trying to give guys a couple days off, which isn't very much. And so we gave them 2 days off, and then we come back, and then we had only eight total practices before we leave for World Champs. So what are you going to do? It's crazy. And so for us to have the front end of the World Championship block and the back end of VNL was a bit of a scheduling challenge for us. And then it turned out we had a couple injuries, of course. And so we had six practices before we left to go to Poland. And then when we got to Poland, we had a number of nagging little injuries that affected performance. And so I don't think that we were in a very good position at World Champs. I really felt like we could have been better.
Yeah.
We could have been better. And a lot of it wasn't in our control. Mm-hmm. I thought that we did a great job of preparing with the limited time that we had and putting Maddie back out on the court and getting him connected and then trying to go out there and play in the World Championships. I really felt that whoever won that match between us and Poland was going to have a good chance to play for the final. That was true. I just wish we had played a little bit better because we played pretty well versus Poland. Our fifth set wasn't great, but we also lost some opportunities at the end of the second set. Like we had some opportunities in that quarterfinal that I really, really think about a lot. Some other wins, integrated, got the staff back together.
Yeah.
And so we brought back Matt Furbringer full time. Mm-hmm. So having Matt back is great for us. He's experienced. He's exceptional. He's really sees the game well. He's very, very good from a defensive side. That's what he did, the Rio quad. So having him back has been outstanding. And then we added Javier Weber. And so bringing in somebody with a different perspective on how to train teams, and Javier and I go way, way back. So I've always been excited to work with Javier and thrilled that we were able to put this together for this quad. So he's made a tremendous impact already because he's added, like I said, I really am trying to learn is more about how to do this job better. And when you're the head coach, that sometimes is a little bit harder. And so you have to seek out other people with different perspectives that you respect and other mentors and evaluate
what
other
teams are doing. Yeah.
A little bit of research here and there. But to have Javier come on the staff is a huge win. Obviously, the rest of our staff, Aaron Brock is our trainer, Nate, your snowboarding buddy that you left behind. And Tim Pillow, our strength and conditioning coach, I just feel like that staff is lights out, lights out. I'm so thrilled with the way everything has gone there. I'm thrilled with what's going on at UCLA. We had a lot of transition this summer there too. I'm thrilled about that. It's just, you got to have good staff. You got to have good teams to coach the team. And we've done a really good job in both places we're talking about this summer. So I think I'm really pleased with the win that we have with the staff. So those are the wins that jump out at me. I think we'll be better moving forward. But I also know the margins. I mean, the men's volleyball world internationally is so crazy. So everybody's so good that there's never a point where you're like, oh, we're pretty good. I'm feeling pretty comfortable. It just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. And so you're always thinking about what you have to do to get a little bit better. And even if you get a little bit better, there's no guarantee. We could get a little bit better. You would think we'd be in a better place next year. We kind of know who the guys are. Staff is in place. It was a little crazy early in the summer with that too. And now everybody kind of knows we've implemented new defensive systems. Our offense seems to be going very, very well. Of course, we have Micah Christensen, who's the best setter in the world right now. And he's phenomenal. So he's really making our team offensively fantastic. So I think there's parts of me that goes, oh, you know, pretty good. And then I think, no, you could still be better next summer and not get the results
Never
you want.
Comfortable. Yeah.
Never.
What are some of those, you know, not so positive moments that you brought up right before, Stephen's question there that are more so in the forefront of your mind, you know, those pain points, those, you know, points of just, you know, realistic improvement that needs to happen. And
right.
That you're, you know, kind of gearing towards reflecting on for 2022 and, you know, maybe, you know, trying to anticipate and, you know, stay ahead of for 2023.
Yes. So I do think our offense is in a good place right now. I think you're always looking at how do you put the best 14 guys together? Eventually you go to the Olympics, your best 12. What is that? What is that combination? I think we have a lot of really nice veteran experience. How are we going to supplement that and make sure that we bring in some youth? That was a big area of focus for us. I'd say that was a win last summer for us, bringing in some young guys that had, you know, tremendous impact, collegiate age guys. Serve and pass still. I mean, at the end of the day, you can talk about all these systems. Serving and passing is such a huge part of it. I think our serving last summer was way better. So can we continue to strategize what we're doing from a reception perspective? I think about that. The time, it's a non-controllable in terms of looking back on 22. There wasn't anything we could do about it. There wasn't anything we could do about some of our nagging little injuries that cropped up during the World Championships. But maybe there is. I mean, we're certainly going to talk about it with the training staff and the strength and conditioning staff about what we need to do to continue to customize everybody's specific plan. Some of that is based on age. Some of that is based on physical need. Some of that is based on an injury history about what we can do to be preventative. I mean, the professionalism of the staff is so high that I think you can have some pretty elite level conversations and really do get into the details of how you would do that for our guys. I think if we're healthy, we're going to be in a really nice place. And if we continue to improve our serve and pass and a little bit of defense, I think we're going to be a good volleyball team.
They announced the BNL schedule, or at least locations, for next year. And Anaheim is on the list for one of the legs, which is huge, I think. I wanted to get your thoughts on just being able to play in front of the home crowd, especially in Anaheim, which is where you guys train.
It's huge. I can't express my gratitude to USA Volleyball and Volleyball World for making that decision. First of all, it's exciting for the American volleyball community that hasn't had an opportunity to see us play on American soil in a long time. And so I'm personally going to spend a lot of my time telling a lot of people, book your trip.
Yeah.
This is not something that happens very often. There's going to be a lot of great matches too. So if you're a young player, and of course you're going to want to come see USA, you're also going to want to watch Iran, Argentina at 3 p.m.
Incredible
on Friday,
matches,
right?
Yeah.
So I think if you're a volleyball fan, this is a tremendous opportunity. Mm-hmm. Tremendous. For us personally, we discussed it a little bit earlier, is the grind of the VNL travel schedule is hard. So if you can get a home match, it's really meaningful just from well-being and connecting with family. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if if I was happy or Michelle was, my wife was more happy. You know, I think it was probably the wives.
Yeah.
And for
that's
us.
That's important though. Yeah.
Very it's important.
Yeah.
And we need to, on the international side, if Brooklyn and Haley want to come watch a volleyball match, we have to bring them overseas. And so for years we were in Chicago. And we had a pretty good thing going in Chicago. I think we were there for six straight years. And so much of that is just scheduling and how things line up. But to be back and play in the U.S. is great for us.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember some of those Chicago matches and I think hosted Poland.
I know.
1 year and, you know, it was a Poland home game.
the only downside, I remember, this goes way back. But we were playing Bulgaria in Chicago and the crowd was overwhelmingly for Bulgaria.
Right. Yeah.
And Skrimov went back. We were up 2-0 and rattled off like five aces. Place is going bananas. And they come back to beat us in five. And I remember I was so upset. And Doug Beal was there and I was like... Doug, we're never coming back, and we have to get more fans here. Like, I was upset, you know.
Got to go somewhere else, anywhere but Chicago.
I want to be home. I want to be home, but can we be home?
You know?
So for the American volleyball fans, because we're going to be in LA, and Iran is in there. I mean, there's going to be some fans out there.
For sure.
So when the tickets go on sale, America, step up. Come to Anaheim. Be there. Be front row. Make a lot of noise. We'll put on a good show for you.
Yeah. Even if it was, you know, Bulgaria, Poland, home match, it's cool to see that, because I've never experienced an international match, an international crowd for volleyball. Mm-hmm. Obviously Tokyo it was the COVID, you know, Olympics, so didn't get that there. So and I've only seen it on TV, but it was kind of cool to see that in the States, in the US, of what it could be, you know, if we could fill that with more Americans, for sure. Yes. But if you're listening now, I don't think tickets are on sale yet, but grab your tickets and go see it. Cause like you said, it doesn't happen very often.
No.
And it's been a while since we've hosted a men's international competition at this level, at least in the States.
It has been a while. I don't remember the last time. And I think bring somebody in your network of family or friends that hasn't watched men's volleyball.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit earlier also about what we see from experiencing the sport from a playing perspective. Boys that are exposed to the sport, here's a volleyball, let's play this, they love it because it's just fun. So the sales pitch is not hard. You just got to get a ball in their hands.
Yeah.
I think for the fan, what we hear a lot is when somebody watches men's volleyball for the first time, they can't believe what they're watching, the athleticism, the power, it's a different game. And then they're hooked. So I think for us, in terms of how we strategize, how we're going to grow the men's game, we talk a lot about how we can just get the word out. Have somebody show up at a volleyball match, see it live. And so for sure, come on out and bring some friends.
Yeah. I think it's a perfect transition.
Yeah.
Into the growth of boys and men's volleyball there.
Absolutely. I was kind of reminiscing on the first time I saw the national.
That was great.
It was over at the Galen Center. I think it was 2015, the USAV Cup. I actually met Taylor Sander and Micah Christensen there. And then,
that's when we were playing Iran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
that was crazy.
Over at the pyramid too. It was great. I've been hooked ever since. I mean, 2013, you know, that's when I first started playing volleyball, senior high school. But yeah, just reflecting on the game and just, you know, how that's grown. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely agree with you. Just, you know, with your suggestion of just bringing somebody there who's never seen the game. You know, football player friend or that athlete friend who, you know, is bored during springtime and he needs something to do, you know, go out and try volleyball. Go look at what it looks like. Go look at the top tier people playing the game.
Yeah.
It'll change your life for sure.
Yes, mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I remember just quickly, and we've talked about this on the podcast, I'm not a volleyball. I don't come from a volleyball background. Parents didn't play, don't have any siblings you play, but I was playing in a fun, like sixes beach tournament, like in college, just for a fundraiser or something. And the men's club team was there doing some recruiting for the club. And so, they asked a few of us and I was one of them to come check out practice, do a tryout, whatever, check it out, just see if you're interested. And I had never seen men's volleyball to that level, and just 1 foot in the door and seeing these guys flying around and hitting the ball a million miles an hour, that was my hook. I was like, I don't know how to play this, but I want to be a part of this.
I want to do that, right?
I want to know how to do that. Yeah.
You know, they're getting engaged in hitting lines.
Yeah.
Because you can hear the crowd when somebody goes up and hammers the ball. You can just hear, you don't see that when most people obviously watch women's volleyball. It's all over the country.
Right, yeah.
Everyone plays it. Every state has state sanctioning. And so when they see somebody thunderball into the rafters, it's you can hear the response.
Yeah.
I always enjoy that.
That's kind of the hook, I think, on the men's side is just being able to bounce the ball.
Right.
That's and coaches, competition within themselves.
Yeah. And the coaches are like, don't do that. Don't hit it low. And part of me is like, it's a nice sales pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go do a little bounce off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, yeah. Just speaking about, you know, kind of going into the growth of boys and men's volleyball in the U.S. And you're the founder of the First Point Volleyball Foundation. Just kind of want to, we've talked about it before on our podcast, but for any new listeners here, could you explain what the First Point Foundation is and your role in that?
So I co-founded it with Wade Girard, and Wade and I go way back, and his daughter, been friends for a long time, his daughter played, and he comes from the fundraising development space for nonprofits. And so he was at a tournament one time and he called me and he said, "Hey, I'm here at this girls tournament. There's thousands of people here. And I just, what do you think? Like, why is men's volleyball not as big? What is that?" And initially we're talking, this is probably spring of 2016. This is just before the Rio Olympics. Okay. So it's been a while now when we had that conversation. And I said, "Wade, we've been talking about this for a long time. I don't know that I have all the answers. Here's a couple thoughts." And he said, I'm gonna play around with this a little bit. I'm gonna write a white paper on it and I'll send it to you." I said, "Okay." And I didn't think much about it because this conversation starts all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't go anywhere.
Right.
And so he sent a white paper. It was 6 or 7 pages. And I remember reading it and thinking, "Gee, this is really good." Considering Wade doesn't have a background in men's volleyball, this is really good. So I called Wade and I said, "Can I forward that to Doug Beal?" So I forwarded it to Doug, and Doug called me back and said the same thing. He said, "This is really good. What do you want to do about it?" So I called Wade and I said, what would you want to do with this? Like, where does this lead? Because we've talked about this for a while. What would you perceive as next steps for what a project might look like in order to grow boys and men's volleyball? So we start talking about that and having that conversation. Had that conversation with USAV and a lot of different stakeholders in volleyball. And ultimately decided to found our own 501c3 foundation. And off we went. And so what he originally did was conducted a study. And so at the time, no one knew who Wade was. Now I think a lot of people in the sport know who Wade is. He's done a tremendous job. I mean, mind-blowingly phenomenal job for men's volleyball. And I don't know that everybody even has a deep appreciation for what he's done for the game. But he did this study and came up with this conclusion that, yeah, there's energy, there's momentum, there's people, there's leadership, there's interest in doing this, and I think you should do it. So that led to the foundation being founded. And then there's just been this journey over the last 5 years where we've put together a tremendous board, raised significant philanthropic dollars, deployed that as we said we would in the right places. We've had just, I think, so much success, more than I probably ever realized at various different levels. And for me to see that an intentional effort like this, when it's hyper-focused and led as well as it's been led by Wade and the board, that the difference that we've been able to make in this period of time without no one knowing who we are, and there's no track record. When we ask somebody to support us financially, when we do that at UCLA, I can give you free tickets. I can give you, we can go to events.
Right.
We're saying, "Hey, this is a sport that's impacted us. Can you help us support that for the next generation of boys and men's volleyball players?" And people have been very generous, and our board has been amazingly generous. And we've made, I think, an amazing impact. I mean, one of the best things that's happened, which actually wasn't part of the original strategic plan, was high school state sanctioning.
Mm-hmm.
So part of, I think, volleyball's issue, one of the issues is it costs money to play club volleyball. So there's a barrier of entry of financial resources. So how do you get through that? That's something we needed to talk about. So one of the ways is to have high schools sponsor it. So kids that are in all communities can play that. And so Kenny Rogers is one of our board members who really led the charge to build a high school advocacy group. And now we've got representatives from 50 states, and now we've added six states just in the last couple of years. Awesome. I mean, I'd have to go back and look at the stats. And we added five just this year, mm-hmm. in Minnesota just a couple of weeks ago. So they're either categorized now as an emerging sport or sanctioned fully, or they're all on different runways. But that to me is amazing. Think about how many boys are going to be exposed to the game that don't have to pay to do that. Think about the economy that's going to build, because there's a percentage of those boys that will pay. So there's going to be new clubs. Yep. There's going to be new programs. There's going to be new talent. This is amazing. I'm excited. I think the high school group has been a win, as we're talking about wins. Mm-hmm. I think First Point has been a tremendous win. I think what we did at the SIAC and diversity initiatives, we've added D1 programs. We had some goals that we set out, and we've already exceeded our goal at the JC level. Like JC's, we were talking about a top-down, bottom-up approach right from the beginning, meaning if you look at what happened with beach volleyball, they added collegiate beach volleyball scholarships that people could attain, and it created an entire ecosystem, clubs and players, and there didn't used to be anything as like a beach volleyball club. Now they're everywhere. There's 80 something schools that are playing. Mm-hmm. So we knew that the top down worked as well, and we had that case study as an example. We also knew that for boys, we needed to expose more boys to play in the game. And how are we going to build? If we're going to build more at the top, you also have to build up talent at the bottom. Can we do it from the bottom up? JCs are like right in the middle.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a huge strategic initiative. We've already exceeded our goal for 2028, I think. So we've just been continuing to rack up wins with First Point. NAIA. So I'm sure most people don't know this, but NAIA was at 36 schools. Their championship threshold. So the championship threshold, the NC2A is 50. USAV was very involved in getting 50 D3 schools. And then in the last 7-8 years, I actually don't know when that was officially, when they reached 50 and had their own championship, but they're over, I think, 120 now. Yeah. So once you get to a championship threshold, other athletic directors see that it's its own standalone championship. There's momentum to add. So we knew that achieving championship status was a worthwhile endeavor. So we gave four $20,000 grants to four NAIA schools. You know where they're at today? 67.
Wow.
Without another dollar added.
Wow.
So we seeded $80,000 from the board, and now NAIA is churning out scholarships every year. And that to me is like, so we've won at JC, we've won at NAI, we've added D2s, we've added D1s. There was a really impactful leader within our sport who told me when we started this that, you know, the chance of this working were real low, and if you got one D1, it would be the biggest home run for the sport ever. Well, I think have we added five? So I mean, we've literally won so far at every single level. And now people are starting to hear a little bit about what we're doing. We have a body of knowledge because we now know what it's going to cost to potentially do X, Y, or Z. We know how to go through the process of supporting states and their sanctioning efforts. We have resources there that we can share and provide. And so now I think we've probably done the hard part, which is getting it off the ground and proving that we can do it. So now it's, how do we finish off our grants that we have outstanding right now? What's the plans that we're going to put in place for how we're looking towards 2028? And that's going to be some of the strategic conversations we're going to be having tomorrow.
Yeah, that's cool.
How much of this is applied to, you know, what you do on the collegiate level at UCLA? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's something you're there, you know, involved, immersed in a program from head to toe. There's a lot of that, you know, cross-reference, is a lot of it just integrated in what you already do to, you know, help the game and help First Point.
Right. So the crossover with UCLA is not direct, meaning First Point for me comes from two thoughts. First and foremost, wanting to give back to the sport that's given me everything. You guys are interviewing me on a podcast? Why does anybody care? Because the sport of volleyball, right? I'm a kid from Arcadia who didn't start playing until the 10th grade. And here I am in this position where I can give back. I can make a difference. The sport has made a difference in my life, not just because it's given me a profession, but obviously sport is a medium that teaches all of our kids, Brooklyn and Haley and all the kids that are listening, the parents that are listening, all your kids, it's life lessons through the opportunity to compete and lose and respond and watch how it's done and what is excellence. There's very few ways to teach children that, and sport is one of them and maybe the best one. So if we can give that opportunity to kids, then I'm all in. So I want to give back. So that's number one. Number two is, as the national team coach, we've talked for a long time about how do I, or we, make the job better for whoever comes after us. To me, that's really important. I'm a USA guy. I won't do this forever. And when I walk away, I want to be able to give a program to the next guy that's far, far better than it was for me. And there's two different ways, I think, in terms of talent that we can develop talent. One is you do a better job of training the talent that you currently have. Okay, so what does that look like from an NTDP conversation? How does that look like from a talent acquisition? What ages? How do we find it, get it into the gym, train it, and ramp it up at a younger age? I think that's something, not too young. I don't want to get in that conversation, but yeah. I think that is something that's really important. Number two is you want to expand the talent base. And so, okay, how do you do that? Well, that's a larger, harder conversation that I think we talked about in concept for years and years and years. And first point is really the most meaningful way we've ever been able to do that. So the national team hat that I have is a first point, is a medium for us to go get more boys to play the game so that in Brisbane or wherever the Olympics are after that, there might be a kid that it's started playing in the state of Utah or Minnesota or Delaware or these states that we've added recently. And we're going to add more. We're going to get more. And so we're just warming up. And so I think once we get more and more kids, there's going to be a kid that's going to be coming from someplace like that, that's going to be on an Olympic team in 2036, 2040, you know, and I'm going to be sitting at home watching it on TV with all of you. And maybe you'll be doing this, the media, Stephen.
Maybe.
But I'll be sitting at home.
Yeah.
And that's the mission. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really quick, for, we talked about all your work that you're doing with the First Point Foundation. On the other side of it, for, you know, a mom who's listening in their home state, or a kid who's listening in their home state, what are the first steps for them to, if volleyball doesn't exist at the high school level in that state, what are the first steps for them? Can they reach out to you? Like, what, how do they get started with that?
Well, I wasn't waving at you in the middle of your question, by the way. That was Johnny Hawks that just walked by, new head coach, Loyola Chicago.
Love that.
A lot of people are waving. I'm trying, not to.
It works. It's part of the immersion of the live environment.
That's right. Here we are. Yeah, we are in the midst of all this. That's a great question. I think you probably are reaching out to your local region. You can probably reach out to USAV.
Yep.
I think there's resources online where you can find local clinics and clubs. And then you probably could just go to a local clinic, and that person that's running a clinic will probably know about the local environment, mm-hmm. The local resources that are there for someone to go and play. And I know more clubs, even the clubs that have nothing but women's programs, are talking about adding men's teams. I mean, this conversation is continuing to broaden. And so I think there'll be more and more opportunities for boys that are in regions that typically don't play volleyball to have a chance to go and play.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited to just see the momentum continue and the energy for boys volleyball, because I think it's definitely there. And it was interesting to hear you compare the beach, women's beach, and boys, men's volleyball, and the different approaches, kind of starting with boys on the opposite bottom up, creating that need. Where colleges are like almost forced to start a program. So,
well, I mean, that would be ideal, right? Yeah. I mean, if you go, say, for example, Minnesota, they agreed to sanction it or put it as an emerging sport last week. So what if 5 years from now, there's 10,000 boys playing in that state?
Yeah.
And Big Ten, obviously we're at four schools now with UCLA and SC migrating to the Big Ten and Ohio State and Penn State. Like, all of a sudden you can start having some other bigger conversations.
Yeah.
the collegiate landscape is hard to predict right now, but we do know that this is a great sport. Boys are loving playing it. It's going in the right direction. It's the fastest growing sport in America for boys. Has been for a long time. I just think there's a lot of real positives. We're going in the right direction. First points made a big difference in that too, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah. Really quick, want to check on time for you. We just want to talk about UCLA when we get that in too, but
yeah,
just
sure.
want to check on time.
Make
sure you don't need to run off to a session or anything.
No.
Okay. Yeah, really quick before we end here, just wanted to kind of talk about UCLA a little bit. What's the excitement level for you to entering into this season?
It's really high.
Yeah.
I like our team.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where we're going to end up. I think there's some really, really great teams out there. Obviously, Hawaii's won a couple championships in a row, and they return, I think, just about everybody. So I think there's some great teams out there. I think we're significantly better than we were last year. The practices in our gym are very, very high level. Part of it is because now we have two really, really good setters in our gym right now. If you think about last year, Miles was setting, Miles Partain, I'm sure you've talked about it a lot.
Yeah, he's doing some things.
He's doing some things. So last year was his first year setting, and now we have him with a lot of confidence, who's had some experience. And now we've added Andrew Rowan, who I think is maybe the top young setting prospect in our NTD pipeline.
Okay, yeah.
And so the quality of setting on both sides of our court right now is outstanding. We've gotten significantly stronger, more experienced in a lot of different areas. There was a number of guys that were in the national team gym this last summer. So there's no question we're in a better place this fall than we were a year ago. Mm-hmm. So that's what you want, right? I mean, you want to keep moving things in the right direction. And so I don't know that automatically means we're going to have more wins. It does mean we're doing some good things and put ourselves in an opportunity to win. There's just so many good teams out there.
Yeah.
You look at some of these fall tournaments and you look at the teams. There's just so many boys that play the game now, and there's not enough places for them to go play that just there's no easy night now. There's just back in the 15, 20 years ago, there was probably some nights when knew you were going to go out there and win in three and you could probably play your second team. And I just don't know what match that is this year. So it's going to be a challenge.
Just more super teams now, I feel like.
No question.
Yeah.
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 What do you enjoy most about coaching at UCLA at the program here?
It's a pretty different job. So if you're talking about just the ages, the difference between an 18 and 22-year-old is pretty significant. The learning curve, both from how you understand and play the game, but also from a physical development perspective, you're on this huge ramp of a learning curve. It's really steep. Once you get to 22, I mean, obviously, you're seeing some of our players on the national team continue on that path. TJ DeFalco is a perfect example. Like, his ability to continue to physically develop and to develop his game has been tremendous over the last couple of years. Very impressive. So we know that can continue, but it's really dynamic between 18 and 22. The national team, you get them and they're a little bit more physically developed. And then a couple of years after that, they're kind of where they're at, and the learning curve starts to slow down. And then you get to the latter 20s and early 30s where some of our guys are. And now it's just about, how do we make them feel good? What is the strength conditioning program? Because you're probably not changing a whole lot of the way they play the game. So how can we make sure that when they go out there, they're feeling like they're at peak performance? So getting back to your question about UCLA, you're in this really dynamic time frame, and that's really exciting for me. And I think we can make a real difference with these young men. They're leaving home, so there's a lot of personal development along with the physical and volleyball development. So that's fun for me. I think it's impactful. I want to make an impact. So that's a way for me to do that. And it's home. I played at UCLA and was in the dorms with Eric, like we were talking about. So I think for me to be home and be with, all the other coaches, I'm in a suite with Stein Metzger Adam Wright's right next to me, and Seeley just hung him up, but these are teammates that I'm really close with. So it's really nice to go to work when you're working with your former teammates.
Yeah.
And so the environment is fantastic. I love UCLA. It's an incredible institution academically and athletically. And I like being around that level of excellence. It makes me better. And so it's always been an enriching part of my life, and I love being there to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good luck in the UCLA season, and looking forward to seeing you in USA again this summer. And hopefully I'll be in Anaheim for those matches. I'm looking forward to that as well. If not, I will be watching for sure.
Oh, you got to come out.
Come
on out.
Well, maybe we'll make the drive, do another road trip.
Ooh.
Hopefully less snow that time.
I was just
going
to say, it made it easier a road trip. You wouldn't have to worry about getting snowed in.
That's right.
That's homecoming, too. You know, I'm born and raised in Long Beach.
Okay.
I would love any chance to get to go back.
All right. Well, you're there for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, really quick, too. I want to ask about a former guest we had on the pod.
Oh, yes.
On the podcast, too. One of your middle blockers, Daniel Matheny.
Danny Matheny.
We had him.
Did you?
He's just amazing.
Yeah, we had him on a little earlier. One of our early episodes in the podcast. Great.
Really?
Great guy. Yeah. Smart. Yeah. Very smart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a great head on his shoulders. And you know, he loves the game of volleyball. Just want to ask, how is he doing? How is it like, you know, coaching?
I haven't talked to him since he's gone overseas.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's loving it. Mm-hmm. Danny's going to be one of these guys that's going to embrace the experience. I think he's going to, you can go overseas, you have some choices, and he's going to be a guy that's going to get out and about and learn the language. And his mom is from Spain, so he's got a European background.
Okay.
And so I think he's going to be very, very comfortable in Europe. I think he's going to find a home there. I know he had the option to come back and go to grad school, but I think he was ready to go experience Europe. I think that's something that he's been pulled to do. Danny really provided, I think, quite a bit of leadership for us, particularly during the period of George Floyd and the social justice conversation that was going on in earnest. We had 6 men of color on our team during that period of time, which is probably the most, and I would imagine, the history of the sport. And so Danny, I think, provided quite a bit of leadership and perspective and poise. And I think he was a real... I had a lot of conversations with Danny during that time, and I've always appreciated his patience and grace and understanding and leadership for the team. So I'm excited that he's had the opportunity that he has to go continue playing overseas. I know it's something that he always wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, especially during that time frame you talk about, you know, in addition to, you know, being on our podcast and all that, on all that stuff too, you know, there were some more serious conversations being had, you know, in the diversity, equity, and inclusion situation, not only with USA Volleyball, but within like the USLPC. And he was asking, you know, if he can sit in on certain conversations being had. And, you know, he spoke up and needed and, you know, gave his, you know, collegiate athletic experience towards that and his, you know, opinion and, you know, values and mindset towards a lot of that too. And it was very well received too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's good to hear that those conversations kept, you know, happening and, you know, were present, you know, during his time there too. So just, you know, I really, really commend him for that. You know, really admirable for him to, you know, be able to step up and speak into that light.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Thanks, John. This has been great. Anything else that you'd like to share or talk about before?
I just want to know how to get one of these t-shirts. This, you know,
oh yeah. We'll send
USA
you one.
Volleyball show.
We'll send you one.
Sweet. Might have one.
Do we have any on hand right now?
Oh my gosh, you should be handing them out here. You're at the ABCA convention.
Okay. We only had a budget for a very limited amount of them.
You got to get in. You got to get into the merch sales.
I know. We're starting to get in there. Mm-hmm. We got a marketing lead now.
So we're good.
I appreciate the conversation. These are always fun for me, and happy to do it anytime. So thanks for doing what you're doing for the sport.
Yeah. No, thank you, and I'm sure we'll see you around.
You bet.
We'll let you get back to networking and catching up with old friends.
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, John.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Man, I really hope we can make this USA Volleyball staff retreat happen in the mountains.
I just want to snowboard.
Whether that's Colorado or California, I don't care, but I'd love to
snowboard with
snowboard
the
side
team,
by side everybody? With John Sproul. That'd be sweet.
I feel like he'd show you up too.
Oh, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I won't take the job of leading.
He's not new to this. He's true.
If we're in California, I don't know the mountain anyway, so I won't be the guy.
I mean, they're not Colorado, you know.
Yeah.
just saying. No, never been to either or, but
yeah. No, that'd be a lot of fun if we could make that happen.
Absolutely.
That'd be fun to see you know, those people. Our national team coaches and even some of our colleague staff. Mm-hmm.
Well, even meeting Nate at the Women's Open program in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
You guys are through the moon over there too.
And it's fun to see.
Super chill. I loved it. Like, I think, I don't know if I'm about to speak over you.
No, go ahead.
What you're about
go
to
ahead.
Say, but it's good to see, like, you know, our coworkers and friends and colleagues in that different light.
Yeah.
That doesn't immerse us in volleyball the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, like how just what gets you going, you know, snowboarding or, you know, playing music if you're Matt Potschweit, you know, and the Sofa Killers, or, you know, you're John Sparrow, and, you know, going snowboarding and stuff, and, you know, transitioning into those habits that, that you can't necessarily do now because of fatherhood, but you still have those tendencies and those things that keep you cool, calm, and collected. and prepared and, you know, just down to earth. Did I go on a rant there?
No.
Was that too much?
That was exactly what I was going to say. It's just fun to see, you know, outside of the volleyball environment, you know, the work environment, just to see people and and what they what they're interested in. I think that's awesome. And I think something our fans appreciate, too. They don't, you know, probably didn't know that John was an avid reader. Hopefully he can get back to that hobby, that interest here soon. Really cool to hear him, you know, talking about being a dad and what he loves about being a dad. You know, one of the and also just being here at ABCA, just you could see the excitement that he had just being here. We saw him last night too, already mixing it up, mingling with, you know, all the other coaches that are here.
You talked a little bit about that too. Just, you know, meeting, reuniting with those friends and colleagues and, you know, old college roommates that, you know, you haven't really seen in years and you don't really take the time to talk to anymore. You know, a lot of the conversations that we have with our, you know, players are on Open Nationals, how they get together every year. And this is like their thing. That's their thing that they do. And it's their reunion.
It's a big reunion.
ABCA, same thing. Final Four, same thing. This is that time for you to take to really reunite with your peers and colleagues and friends. Of, you know, old times, past times, new times, every type of time in between. You know?
Yeah, the volleyball community sometimes seems like a small world because you just know.
It kind of is.
Know so many people, have so many connections. Even if you don't know someone directly, you, you know, coached with their assistant coach or something like that. And I'm excited. You know, it's only day one here at ABCA, but I'm excited just kind of witness that and meet people, too, that I haven't met before. I loved hearing John talk about, you know, just the growth of boys and men's volleyball, and his involvement being the co-founder of the First Point Volleyball Foundation, and just all the work that they're doing. It's, you know, it was exciting sitting here listening to him, listening to him
and
talk about
it. You hear the passion behind it and the drive and the love behind it, too. You know, it takes a village. It sounded like it, you know, it's got so many moving parts, so many levels to it. And he's already talking about like goals that they've hit for 2028. And, you know, we haven't even finished 2022 yet, which is insane. And it's so great to hear. And, you know, they keep leveling up from now. I'm like, how can they continue to keep doing what they're doing for, you know, the growth of the game of boys volleyball?
You
know, kid from Arcadia, right?
Right. Kid from Arcadia.
Not that far. Long Beach is not that far from Arcadia.
That might be the title of the episode. That was kind of a cool tagline. That was cool. Kid from Arcadia. I love that. No, and he kind of, we kind of touched on it a little bit. Just, you know, First Point Foundation, USA Volleyball came together to give $1 million grant in 2019 to the, hope I get it right, Southern Intercollegiate Athletic Conference, SIAC. Excuse me.
That is correct.
The a grant to them so they could start six programs at their member schools.
And shout out to the Central State Motors. I believe they won
the inaugural
first inaugural season back in April, my birthday month. That aside, shout out to them. And, you know, just
and head coach Ray Lewis, who we've had on the podcast,
is also here. He's here in Omaha.
He led the program.
He did.
To their first, to the inaugural championship for that conference. So I think that's really cool. And, you know, John talked a little bit about that, but just, you know, the approach that they've had too, which, you know, just getting more high schools to sanction boys volleyball. And I think that's the start of the domino effect.
Yeah. I think Colorado is actually one of those, you know, newly sanctioned sports for boys volleyball. So I've heard. It'd be amazing to, you know, get involved in coaching on that side of things, on the boys side of things, on the high school side of things in Colorado. But just amazing. You know, like, you know, I'm from a city like a state like California where it's been around and there's so much available to us, yet it's still not as accessible as we were talking about there. And then you talk about, you know, places like Delaware, and I think you mentioned Minnesota for one of them, who are, you know, just getting started. And, you know, I really loved when he talked about and said, like, you know, there's going to be a future national team player coming from one of these newly sanctioned states for the game of boys volleyball. And, you know, the fact that he's going to, you know, be on his couch, kicking up his feet and watching that and witnessing that and, you know, being a testament to that is, it's amazing. You know, I don't think there'll be words for that. You know, he'll probably find words with a, you know, as much of a cool, calm, and collected guy as, you know, John is, but like, wow, like that full circle, he's already talking about it. And it hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah. Such a cool conversation. I'm excited. We could talk about it for forever. We could have a whole separate podcast and talk about, 100%. You know, just our reactions from this, but we'll let John speak for himself. And that was just a great conversation. But just wanted to mention, you know, we talked about it in the conversation with John, but Anaheim. See if we can find the dates for that. I can't remember the dates for the leg of Villanelle that the for the men's national team in Anaheim, but tickets aren't on sale yet, but when they go on sale, check it out. Mm-hmm. Like John said, bring a friend who... Bring two friends. Mm-hmm. Have your friend that you're bringing, bring a friend. Mm-hmm. But who may not have ever seen, you know, men's volleyball to that level. This is the top men's team for USA. We're getting the dates here. July 4th through the 9th in Anaheim, California. So...
Summertime.
Be ready. You know? Stay tuned to USA Volleyball social media. We'll have those ticket links out. And bring a friend. This doesn't happen. This is so rare to have the top USA men's team. The team, a lot of them, were at the Olympics that you'll be able to watch. So. Mm-hmm. Just an exciting opportunity and let's just fill it up. Let's fill up the crowd. Let's fill up the stands. Let's give them
that home court
that special feeling. Yeah.
You know, while we're literally at our home.
Yeah.
You know? So
we fill up the crowds fill up overseas. Let's do it here in the States. I think that would be awesome.
I think I'll be in Chicago working Girls Internationals during that time, but I will be watching
TV. I'll yell extra loud for you.
Four of us because, let's do it. I know we talked about it in the interview. I don't know why I'm stuttering right now. I'm so excited. But,
it's just day one. We're getting excited.
I remember just my first time seeing the men's national team, you know, being a new volleyball player in 2013. I'm like, wow. Like, I think the thing that got me hooked was blocking. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy just roofed this guy. Yeah. His like neck is over the net, just pressing over. And I'm like, I need to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ended up like leading the league in blocks as a middle first year playing like for myself.
That was your hook.
That was the hook. That was it. And I made like first team all more league. Mm-hmm. You talking about CIF and stuff. I'm like bringing back all those memories.
And you watched the men's team, got to meet Taylor Sander, Micah Christensen, and look at you now. You're here with USA Volleyball and
touche.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We've had them on the podcast too. Mm-hmm. Full circle.
So yeah. Go
small
out there
community.
And watch the national team. Watch the best level of volleyball in the world. You will not regret it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just wanted to thank John again for taking the time out of his very busy schedule here at ABCA to sit down and talk with us for about an hour. And just a great conversation. Mm-hmm. He's such a cool guy.
Hope he gets a chance to eat today. Man, busy. Yeah,
hope he worked out meals into his schedule. but excited to talk to John. Thank you again. Hope everybody enjoyed that conversation. We have a lot of events coming up, Clarence, that I'm sure that you'll be able to fill us in on when those registrations open and when those
we still have a registration open for a lot of our national qualifiers happening. We're getting to the tail end of our Salt Lake City 18s girls qualifier. If you haven't registered for that, registration is open until December 27th, or just before the new year. And we also have registration open for our Boys Junior Nationals, the 2023 Boys Junior National Championship being held in Salt Lake City, Utah, in early July. So registration is open for that. Also, we have our 2023 Girls 18s Junior National Championship registration opened, is also open, and that is happening in Columbus, Ohio at the end of April. So go ahead and register your teams for that. I know we got a few bid tournaments and qualifiers coming up, so you know, good luck to all teams competing and hope to see you guys there for sure.
We have our producer Curtis Ward with the message here. I can't see it. I don't have great eyes, Curtis.
I'm crying because I could not see that. I have 20/20 vision. I don't know what's happening.
Hand it to Clarence. Read that note from our producer, Curtis,
all right.
For us.
Curtis just wanted us to remind you all that we will also be having our interview with Tama Miyashiro.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This Friday at 1:15 Central Time in the Podcast Center right here in Omaha, Nebraska at the ABCA convention.
Yeah. Make a note that we need bigger cue cards. Make a note for that in our marketing budget for next year.
I'm so embarrassed of myself that I struggled like that. Thank you, Curtis. Appreciate it.
No, what we need is once we have, you know, more of a studio setup, maybe we'll have a
Don't forget that.
Or even in this environment, we could have you on a mic and headphones too, so you could talk to us. But
anyway, hey guys, just chime in and cut us off. You know,
really quick, another note too. ABCA is going on, but also the NCAA championships too. Very exciting.
So excited for that.
Man, last round was incredible.
My bracket's completely busted.
Oh, mine was busted at the start.
Mine was busted during Selection Sunday, but we're not going to talk
Nebraska,
about that.
Come on. No. Very exciting last round matches. Couple of five setters. Really exciting to see. Yeah. We got, who do we got? We got Texas, San Diego, Louisville, and
Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll be able to, if you're listening to this, Wednesday, December 14th, the semifinals tomorrow, Thursday, December 15th.
Correct.
Will happen. So, and I believe that's on ESPN.
Yeah, it'll be on ESPN.
I think both are on ESPN.
If you have ESPN Plus, you will also have access to the wraparound.
Okay.
Which is basically the NFL Red Zone version.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The national championship, so it'll take you game to game, special moment to special moment, very, very, you know, high level moment to high level moment. And then we have the national championship match on Saturday, December 17th.
Yeah.
So we'll be curious to see who ends up in that, because as of right now, it's anyone's game. So
that's right.
I'm done making predictions.
It's exciting.
I'm not good at it.
So. I've never seen this in person, so I'm excited to be able to watch it.
Oh my God, I'm be so
just
hyped
the energy.
About it. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
We will be working.
We'll be working
a lot of media relation type things during there, but
we'll take moments to enjoy it though, for sure.
I might cry. I'm not gonna lie, I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. But if you're listening to this when this comes out, definitely check those matches out. It helps the game of volleyball grow, and just reach new listeners. And I said that wrong. Just watch volleyball. Watch volleyball when it's available to you.
I think you kind of mixed that. You kind of
did.
I
mushed our outros here, but yeah, just. This is an opportunity to watch high level volleyball. And, you know, if you're a parent at home too, show your kids, watch with your kids, you know, maybe that will spark a love for volleyball for them. Even if you're not a volleyball person yourself, they might be. And, you know, that just helps the game of volleyball grow and more opportunities later on. Like we talked about in our conversation with John, you know, this is how you introduce volleyball to a young person, a young athlete, is just get them to watch it and they'll fall in love. They'll find their hook.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And not only, you know, with us just talking about trying to grow the game of volleyball, we're also trying to grow this podcast within the USA Volleyball Show, you know, giving, you know, illustrious coaches the platform or players that platform to just really talk about the game that they love and then some. You know,
right.
We always want to know the player, you know, off the court just as much as we want to get to know that player on the court too.
Right.
But, you know, same thing applies to this podcast. If you guys have something you want to hear us talk about, if you're here at ABCA, come find us and talk to us about certain things. And, you know, we will do our best to literally get you on the show and get what you want talked about here. You can email us too at theusavshow@usav.org. But, you know, we're here to listen to you guys. We're here to provide that platform for all of you who we consider friends of the pod, who, you know, download our episodes and listen to us every other Wednesday and listen to hello all the time. Like, you know, it really means a lot to us. And, you know, the fact that we're even able to come here and represent the podcast while representing USA Volleyball, of course, you know, and do our thing here. It's something I'm going to remember for the rest of my life and be very, very, very thankful for. And, you know, moments like these, you don't want to take for granted. So again, get out there, watch volleyball, get out there, download this podcast. Yeah. It's for you guys just to help grow the game. And, you know, very thankful we get to, you know, be a part of this thing here too. But enough of that rant again.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Yeah.
I've been ranting.
No, I love that. Couldn't say it better for myself. Very thankful to be here. This is awesome. Yeah.
Remember, we have episodes dropping every other Wednesday. I believe we'll have a few special episodes, you know, while we're here at the ABCA convention and Final Four National Championship match, along with, I just blanked out there, but along with some social media hits. I don't know why I couldn't think of that one right there.
A lot of great content will come out of this.
Great content.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And I am done. Take it away, Steven.
And that is it for this episode. You're listening to the USA Volleyball Show, the official podcast of USA Volleyball.
This has been the USA Volleyball Show with Clarence Hughes and Steven Munson, produced by Curtis Ward. Our content producer is Laura Fawcett. Our marketing lead is Bree Jaycox. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to rate and review. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to the USA Volleyball Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts.